Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, brought to you by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. We are live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you. Sean Rourke from NHL.com will be with us at 7:30 here on the program. We will get into the Predators and the Stanley Cup Final with him a little bit later in the show. Joe, I'm watching this Cup Final going on right now, and I can't help but just think about the quality of hockey that I'm seeing from the two teams we're watching and the level of hockey that we saw from the Predators all season long. As we know, there's an enormous gap between those two things that we just talked about. I mean, the Predators finished with the third worst record in the league, and they're drafting fifth overall, and a lot of questions about where this thing is headed with the Predators here. And I can't help but wonder, as I look at where their roster is right now, the age of some of their veteran forwards, frankly, the age of some of their guys on defense, namely Josi, who has been such a great player for a long time, and you wonder kind of what the next step looks like for him. Juuse Saros and his contract is kicking in this season. So there's a lot that screams, hey, you better win right now if you're the Predators, right? We've talked about that. And then you look at the roster and you're like, well, are they really equipped to win right now? Like, can they actually compete for a championship with this roster? It's hard for me to get there based on what we saw last year, even if you think the coach is the main problem. Like, it's still hard for me to get there with this roster that they're competing for a championship. So I keep going back to this. Like, are they in no man's land? Are they sitting here trying to wait on a younger core that right now at the moment I'm not convinced has enough great players to really accelerate this process? Or are they just headed towards a trajectory right now where they're going to be bad for a few years? It was interesting. So, you know, James Myrtle, who does a good job covering the Toronto Maple Leafs and different things throughout the NHL, you know, he said this on the Leaf Report podcast, and he was talking about the Predators. And one of the things he said, Joe, was that he's not sure that the Predators, quote, see a realistic path to being good, and talked about the idea of maybe being willing to take a step back to be better in the future. Like, I saw that yesterday, and my first thought was, okay, well, you just signed all these guys. And as I've talked about, you're going to have a hard time convincing me that Barry Trotz has had conversations with Steven Stamkos and Philip Forsberg and Jonathan Marchessault and Ryan O'Reilly and all these guys. And the message has been, well, it may be a struggle for the next couple of years. Like, there's just no way that those guys would buy into that. So it leaves me wondering, Joe, where's this all going? Like, where is this headed? And is there a path out of this at any point, or are they just kind of stuck in no man's land right now with no real end in sight towards being competitive anytime soon?
Well, those are all great questions, but I don't – like, I saw the thing from Myrtle, and I saw Vingan posted, like, a headline that he had written a few years ago, which is like, you know, the Preds may need to be bad for a while to be good again, right? Which is something we talked about – I mean, we talked about for years.
Yep.
And the whole, you know, tanking and all this stuff and being real bad. And, you know, sometimes it has worked. You get that right year and you get that top pick that's a really special top pick, or you could be you could be my beloved Detroit Red Wings, for example, and just be bad for a long, long time and still see really no path out of it right now to be any kind of contender.
Yep.
But my answer on the Preds is very simple. I mean, yes, I think it may be absolute pain. It may be headed for total disaster. It may be headed for coach firing. It may be headed for next after that would be Trotz genuinely on a hot seat and all that, and maybe looking at massive changes. But if you're the Preds, if you're Trotz, there's only one way to go, which is you have to figure out a way to be good right away. You have to. You've done all these things to load up for now. And again, especially you have invested so much in a goaltender who is not going to be better in 2029 than he is in 2025.
No.
He's not going to be better in 2028 than he is in 2020. I don't know how good he's going to be in 2025 or 2026. After last year, I have serious questions, but I do know that you're not waiting two more years or three more years for it to get better, right? You've invested a huge chunk in him leading you to contention. So you have to do it right now. That's all there is to it. And it may be disaster, but also, is it possible that things come together, they make some good ads, some of these guys get back to, you know, not having career bad years, and they actually turn into a good team next year? Yeah, it's not the craziest idea.
It's not the craziest idea, but I still keep coming back to where they're at center right now. And look, Ryan O'Reilly is their number one guy at center, and he's not getting any younger. Like, Ryan O'Reilly, like, I was thinking about this the other day. On Edmonton or Florida, where would Ryan O'Reilly kind of slot in? And I think he would be like a really good third line center for both teams. And there's Absolutely. Nothing wrong with that. Like, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But that's where you're at right now. Like, they with where their roster is, they need one of two things to happen. They either need a Ryan O'Reilly or a Steven Stamkos to, like, get in a time machine and go back a few years and be the player that they used to be, or they need one of these other guys, whether it's a Svechkov or whoever, to just accelerate really, really quickly. And I just don't know that I see either one of those things happening. So, like, I keep going back to, it just feels like the timeline of all these things that they're trying to fit through this small window here just are not adding up. Like, the trying to, and by the way, like, I hear people saying that they should have tanked. Well, they unintentionally did last year, right? Like, that was not the plan to be as bad as they were, but they were bad. So they have, I mean, they've ended up with a top five pick here, and maybe
which
this
was the worst case scenario,
right? And maybe this player, you know, that they draft here in a few weeks ends up being a franchise player, and we look back 15 years from now, and this bad season was the best thing that ever happened to him because they finally got that guy. I have no idea. But I'm just saying, like, in the immediate, I agree with everything you're saying about Saros, the contract, how many veteran guys you've got on your roster, and what you've done now to try to remain competitive as you're waiting on that younger core. I just can't help but, you know, getting the feeling out of my head of the two timelines to me are not adding up. And I just don't know when the next time they're going to be good is. That's what I keep coming back to is, like, are they going to be – and I'm not even talking playoff team because, you know, we had the discussion about that around here so much throughout the last 5-10 years of making the playoffs is good and making the playoffs is fun and all that's great. When's the last time the Predators were a threat in the playoffs? I mean, you have to go back to probably 2019, right? Like, that's the last time you felt like heading into – a playoff run, that they were a legitimate threat to compete for a championship. And that's a long time ago at this point. And I'm looking at where they're at right now, and I'm wondering, when is the next time that we will feel that way again about a Predators team, where they're a legitimate threat to not only just make the playoffs, but compete for a championship?
No, that's a great question. Look, at some point in the not too distant future, I think we're going to be talking about a young, bad team, you know, or on paper, bad team. With some, we're going to see how some of these guys come along and things like that. And their top line guys will have aged out. But I also, look, if you're going to, like, this is where I defend Trotz's approach, is that if you're going to have Roman Josi on your team and you're going to have Philip Forsberg on your team who just signed a big extension, do you not want to try to take advantage of those windows? Those are great players.
For sure.
I mean, you know, Josi won the Norris not that long ago. So it's also for their benefit, right? Like, those guys, obviously, like, they're seeing their career wind down and they want to compete. So I promise you, those guys react, and we know they publicly they did. Those guys reacted the same way we did a year ago when Trotz made all these signings, which is, yes, we got a chance now to do something, you know? And it just went terribly wrong. And they unintentionally tanked, like you said. So, I like, look, at some point here in the future, it's going to have to be the young guys. And, you know, certainly like they have draft capital, like they'll be able to make some moves and try to be competitive, but it's going to be a totally different looking team. But right now, the only approach to me is, what can you do? Like you lay it out perfectly at the center, you know, down the middle. It's just what's the answer? I mean, can they go get a Sam Bennett? I doubt it, but like that's the type of thing they would have to do to really change the math, or just there's going to have to be some unexpected emergence, yeah, or, you know, whatever, like that right now doesn't look very likely. But you have to try to build around what you have now to win next year. You have to.
Well, I think Barry Trotz hit it on the head when he talked about this part of it, which we probably don't talk about enough. I mean, the roster right now is loaded, you know, with 30-year-olds and 32-year-olds and 34-year-olds and all that, right? So you've got that side of it. It also, I mean, over the last year, they've had a lot of 22-year-olds and 21-year-olds and 23-year-olds kind of come up. They are really light on impactful 26, 27, 28-year-olds, right? And that's that are kind of right in the meat, right in the prime of their careers. They just don't really have those guys. I mean, look around. How many of those guys that are – I'm not just talking roster fillers. I'm talking impactful players. How many of those guys do they have? Not very many. So, like, how do you get those guys? Because – and we talked about free agency. It's not great this year. I mean, I guess unless you want to get involved in the Mitch Marner sweepstakes, and I don't think that makes sense really for either side to do that. So I don't expect that to happen. I mean, Sam Bennett, all the reporting around him right now, he ain't getting a free agency. Like, he's staying in Florida. So there are limited answers on the free agent front where those type of guys generally become available. So then it says, all right, are you getting into the offer sheet part of this? Are you getting into the trade part of this? I mean, the one thing that they've got going for them is they're actually in pretty good shape salary cap-wise, and they're about to be in great shape salary cap-wise over the next couple of years as this thing goes up dramatically. So that's the one way where you look at it and say, all right, you've got some room to operate here. I just think based on where their roster is right now, it's going to be really, really, really difficult for them to put together a team, in my opinion, next year. And I'm not talking about just making the playoffs. It's going to be a really difficult challenge to put together a team that is an actual threat to win a championship next year. And go back to last year, Joe, when they signed all these guys. You know, not even sniffing, competing for a championship when you made all those moves. If you would have told us that, and plus, you know, one of those moves is signing the goalie. If you would have told us that, I mean, I think everybody around would have been deeply, deeply disappointed in that.
Shocked, really. Yeah. Like that they're one of the worst teams in the league. That's a shocking outcome. Texter says, Trotz made the moves but didn't really double down, didn't really have the centerpiece needed, and didn't try to make the coach change to get what's needed out of the roster, playing both sides. Yeah, I mean,
one of those things is a really hard thing to do.
Exactly. Like, he's wanted to try to add the centerpiece. I mean, that's, you know, he's been trying to move up in the draft and do a lot of things. But it hasn't worked out. And I think the Marchessault ad last year was kind of, I don't know, almost like an add-on. Right?
Yeah.
Like, hey, you know, this more offense, another winger who can score. Yeah, this team needs that too. But again, like yes, there are two timelines because I think every team has two timelines. Like, every organization has to mind its farm system and has to, like, you want to be thinking about the next way. But like, when you sign Soros, you're not playing both sides. You're not hedging your bets to me. Let's go. That's what you're saying.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. Do you feel like the Predators are in no man's land? And is there a way out of it in the short term? Take your thoughts on that on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game.
Yeah, Barry, without major changes in the coaching staff, without probably major changes on the roster, what gives you the confidence that the results are going to change and a lot of the buy-in and things you're talking about are going to happen?
Well, I think the meetings have happened. The feel of the group, the group has a chip on its shoulder, which isn't a bad thing. You know, when you go into the year with a little bit of a chip on your shoulder, I think we you'll get a team that hopefully will respond in the right way.
That's Barry Trotz as the offseason began for the Predators. Taking your thoughts on the Preds, 615-737-1025. Question I've thrown out there is, are they in no man's land? And is there any way in the short term out of it heading into next year? I mean, really, it comes down, Joe, to what does Barry Trotz have up his sleeve for this offseason? Because, you know, I look at where their roster is, and if you're bringing the same roster back, maybe, I mean, it's hard for me to believe that they're going to be as bad as they were last year, right? Like, I think there's probably some natural course correction that will take place. But again, I'm not talking about being better next year and going from the third worst team in the league to a team that's like scratching and clawing and fighting to try to get that last playoff spot, right? Like, I'm trying to figure out when is the next time that they're going to be a legitimate threat. And that is the question right now that I can't answer. So in the short term, trying to maximize your goalie, trying to maximize whatever it is that Marchessault, Stamkos, Yossi, O'Reilly, that group have together. You've got Forsberg in the mix with all this. Is there a way, if you're Barry Trotz, that you can do enough this offseason to get this team back to being an actual threat next year? It just feels like looking at it right now, not only with them, but with some of the other teams that are in the West right now, it feels like they're just a long, long way away from that. So how does that affect what they do or what they try to do this offseason? It's going to be really interesting to see what Barry Trotz has up his sleeve in that regard.
Yeah, look, to me, he's painted himself into the corner of you have to approach this like you got to the conference final last year and you're just and you're a piece or two away. I know that sounds crazy, but I don't like there's no argument to me otherwise. Like there's no bet hedging at this point. Like someone says, you know, when all these guys, next time the Preds will be like actually competitive, all these guys will be done playing. That may be true. That's probably what I would guess too. But you have to try to add and to load up right now. You have put yourself in that position. Like Raymond and Franklin says, yes, Joe, signing Soros was the let's go move. However, it was the wrong move. Yeah, we agree with that. We said it before he made the move, but he did make the move. So now that he's made the move, what are you supposed to do? You cannot undo that move. So having done that move, I mean, a lot of the strategy for next year is just pure hope, starting with Soros, right?
Yeah.
Pure hope that he is Vezina level good. And of course, you know, they need to help him more and all that stuff. There's any aspect of this team, there's a certain level of, man, this guy needs to be better. Boy, this guy sure needs to be better. Like there you can't. There's only so much you can do, but your moves have to be moves as if you're the GM of a team that is very close to winning a Stanley Cup, as ridiculous as that may sound.
Well, and then it becomes, you know, what's attainable that's out there. You know, the Myrtle's comments are interesting in terms of like, he's not sure the Predators see a realistic path to being good. I mean, I would assume that he's not just pulling that information out of thin air. And like James Myrtle has been a person that has been pretty reputable over the years.
Sounds like they were kind of speculating about putting Ryan O'Reilly back on the list of people to kind of look for, for the Leafs.
Yeah.
Yeah, and just I hadn't listened to the audio. I was just reading the transcript. But, you know, Nashville kind of in the same boat. Are they trying to be good or not? So, yeah.
It's a really interesting – but if that's the way they approach it, Joe, like, can you imagine going from – all right, well, they made the playoffs maybe quicker than we thought. Let's go get Stamkos, Marchessault, and try to get this thing competitive and sign the goalie and all that. To then, like a year later, just pivoting off that and I guess going into rebuild mode at that point. Like, I just don't know how all that's going to go over with your fan base.
It would be absurd. Like, I'm sorry, but that then you're like, okay, so the GM just doesn't know what he's doing at all. That would be the reaction, and that would be the correct reaction. So I understand people are mad if they, you know, whatever, try to just add to this and they go into next year, people are going to be mad. And I get that. But that's, to me, that's what you have to do. If you do something like that, again, then you're just playing it down the middle and you are like you're completely directionless with your goalie in the early stages of this massive deal as he ages. out of it. I mean, it's like there's just no – I can't – it boggles my mind. Like that – yeah, you're right. Merle, there's no way that's just out of thin air. But what are you saying then, Preds? If that's coming from the Preds, what are you saying?
It's a great question.
You are considering saying, you know what? We just botched everything, and never mind. I mean, that's just disastrous GMing.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. Sean Rourke from NHL.com will be with us coming up next. We'll get his thoughts on the Predators and their situation, get his thoughts on the Cup Final tonight, which could end with another championship with the Florida Panthers. All that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Brought to you by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Tuesday morning. Cup Final tonight, Florida with a chance to close it out. And to help us talk more about that, we head to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our buddy Sean Rourke from NHL.com. Sean, good morning, brother. How are you?
Good morning. I just need to start. Somebody thinks that you're not hip.
There's a lot of people that think I'm not hip. It's a long list of folks.
They are wrong.
I agree. They get a whole lot more hip than this show. Me and Rex are together. Yeah.
By the way, speaking of hip, Sean, I just have to tell you, a couple weeks ago I went to see Pantera opening for Metallica. I know that's easy listening to you, but I just want you to know they freaking rocked.
That's awesome to hear. I'm going to see Pantera and Amon Amarth this summer, which should be phenomenal.
Nice. Very nice.
Nice.
So it's been a heck of a final so far, Sean. And you know, we all expected it with the rematch between Florida and Edmonton this year. When Florida is on, we probably haven't talked enough over the last couple of years of just how good they are and how dominant they are. But what do you make of where things stand now with Florida back at home, a chance to close things out tonight and win back-to-back Stanley Cups?
Well, I think you hit it on the head. When Florida's on, they're a menace, right? And that's what they were in Game 5, right? That was a masterclass. Everybody's walked out of that game and said, oh, how could Edmonton be so flat at home? You know, they only had four even-strength shots halfway through the game, 30 minutes into the game, four even-strength shots, two from forwards. And everybody's like, well, Edmonton didn't show up. And I would argue the exact opposite. I think Florida showed up in a way it hadn't yet in the series and just clamped them down. Their forecheck was ridiculous. Like, Edmonton lives on the transition. You know, they love to move the puck out of their zone fast. And every time their D went to pick up the puck, they got hit. And you know, the puck spent a lot of time in Edmonton's zone. And then when it did come out, it was intercepted in the neutral zone. So, you know, if they play that game, they're really, really hard to beat. And that's going to be the question. Do they play that game tonight? Because the one thing they do have is a reputation for not taking elimination games serious enough. Their record in elimination games is really not very good. You look at last year, up 3-0 and taken to a game 7 that they win by one goal. So you're hoping that they've learned their lessons here and you know, the team that showed up in game 5 is going to show up again here in game 6.
Was the goalie switch for Edmonton a mistake, Sean? How much of a factor do you think that was, if any, in the last game?
I don't think it was a factor, right? I don't think Calvin Pickard made a mistake per se. I just think that, you know, you look at those two goals by Brad Marchand. That second goal by Brad Marchand, there's a statue in Pittsburgh of Mario Lemieux.
Yep.
And the goals look very similar. You know, that was a goal where I saw Piers get up in the press box. Like, it took you out of your seat. And I don't know if you've seen the clip of Matthew Tkachuk, who just kept saying, oh my God. Yeah. Like, that's how good that was. I don't think there's a goalie in the league who's going to stop that. I think that, you know, Chris Knobloch needed to stop the bleeding, and Calvin Pickard hadn't lost, right? I covered that series against Vegas. It seems like it was 3 years ago now in the second round. And you know, he had saved their bacon in LA after going down 2-0 with Skinner in the net. And he was at 6-0 and he got hurt. You know, and then Skinner came back in and he had back-to-back shutouts after he gave up, you know, a really, really bad goal in the last second of the game to lose game three. And he was flying high. So, you know, I think he set it up perfectly because now you have a chance to go back to your number one. He hasn't said who plays, but I would be shocked if it's not Skinner, because if that guy has any future in Edmonton, he needs to play game six. You need to put faith in him and say, it's your net and here we go.
Totally agree with that. You know, Edmonton to this point, Sean, I mean, when they've had their backs against the wall, they've responded. I think back to, you know, the LA series where they were down two games in that one, they came back. Earlier this series, down 2-1, and they win game four in overtime. So we've seen them do this. But how big is this moment when you start to kind of look at the big picture of the McDavid-Draisaitl era? How big is tonight's game in this moment for those two specifically?
Look, chances are always important. You know, you don't know how many you're going to get. You know, the hockey gods can be incredibly cruel. I think if you look at this team, you're going to say, regardless of what happens, you know, Connor McDavid is going to get more chances to win the Stanley Cup. And there's been a lot of conversation about it. Dan Rosen and I talked about it on our podcast yesterday at the rink. You know, and Dan's argument is that this is going to define Connor McDavid, right? Stanley Cups define players. And I don't necessarily agree. You know, I grew up in New England, and I grew up with Ray Bourque playing for the Bruins. Not my favorite player, but a fantastic, fantastic defenseman. And he never won a cup there, and they traded him away to Colorado, and he won a cup there. He didn't lead them to that cup. He was a piece of it, but they already had all the pieces in place. And he didn't win it his first year. He had to come back and do it his second year. And I would argue that that cup has nothing to do with his legacy as an NHLer. Certainly for personal fulfillment, it's humongous. But Connor McDavid's going to go down as one of the top five players in the world and in the history of the game, no matter what happens tonight, tomorrow, or 2 days from now if he forces a game seven, or if somehow he never wins a cup in his career. There's no denying who he is and what he is, and he hasn't shrunk from the moment. Although I will say this, in game five, that was his first goal in the series. I think it was only his second even strength point. At some point, we need to talk about Alexander Barkov and exactly how good he is. You think about the four centers he's gone through in these playoffs to get them here. Aho, Matthews, and Kucherov, who's not a center, but that line. Kucherov didn't have any goals after scoring 124 points in the first round. What they've done with Forsling and Ekblad, you know, on the back end, but that the checking ability of Barkov, who does have three Selkies, is ridiculous, and he's still almost a point-a-game player in these playoffs. I think he has 20 points in 23, 24 games. So I've just been overwhelmed with how good he is. In fact, I think he's the MVP of the playoffs, but nobody else agrees with me with that.
I think you make good points, Sean, on, you know, I think we're overly obsessed with rings or like comparing players in whatever sport you want to go to. And, you know, if this player has more than this one, he must be a better player. Or, you know, I mean, if anybody watched Charles Barkley play, no one would say he wasn't an all-time great. He didn't win a ring. I would say that I would think that McDavid, you know, when you're talking about the greatest of all time, you would hope that comes with a Stanley Cup or two at some point. I guess from his perspective, you know, if they come up short, how does he view, you know, that situation moving forward? Is it possible at all that, you know, that he looks around and says, maybe there's a better place for me?
I don't know. I think he would be crushed in the moment. You saw it last year, you know, in the behind the scenes footage that they had. You know, the Amazon Prime show, which was unbelievable, and him completely losing his you-know-what in the locker room. But you see how much it means to him. He's been more determined this year. He's been great. Look, he leads the league with Draisaitl in points in the playoffs with 33. There's only so much you can do. When you're talking about a team sport, right, you're at the mercy of who you have with you, right? And one of the things that I've always argued, you look back the last time there was a repeat Stanley Cup final, and that's Pittsburgh beat Detroit after losing to Detroit, and they beat them in game seven. They won back-to-back 2-1 games. They're actually in the same situation Edmonton is now. They needed to win in Detroit, and then they needed to go home and win. They won each game 2-1. Sidney Crosby, no points. Evgeny Malkin, 1 point. Tyler Kennedy 2 goals, right?
Yep.
So you're at the mercy of what your team can do, because when you get this deep in the playoffs, teams go really deep and they have really good checking lines. Like we just talked about Barkov. So you're going to get neutralized and it's going to be your depth that's going to kind of pay off. And when you think about this series, Brad Marchand has 6 goals. He's playing on the third line with Lundell and Mustarainen. He's eaten Edmonton up in the matchup game. Right? It's not that Connor McDavid's doing anything wrong, but they're playing him to a standstill. And yep. Then Florida's depth has stepped up to a point where they've been able to get a lead in the series. And Connor has no control over that. Like, he needs for his team to win the matchups when he's not on ice. And look, you can say all you want. He's a great player, and he needs a signature moment just like Tom Brady or any other GOAT, Sidney Crosby, whatever it is. But more often than not in a championship game or a championship series, it's people that you don't expect that get you over the top.
Sean, last thing for you here. We were having a discussion about the Predators, and obviously an incredibly disappointing season here. You look at their roster, especially at forward. There's a lot of guys, you know, on the other side of 30, kind of creeping into the mid-30s. Their pipeline has a lot of good players. I'm not sure how many great players they've got coming up. And it kind of feels from the fan base that they're in a little bit of no man's land right now. So how do you view the Predators and the job in front of Barry Trotz of not just getting this team back to competing for a playoff spot, but getting this team back to being a threat to win a championship?
It's a hard job, but I also think Barry is pretty qualified for it. You know, you kind of learn as you go along here in the new quote-unquote NHL that turning a franchise around doesn't need to be a long-term process. You look at the Washington Capitals, right, and they made the playoffs last year. They were the last team in. They made it on the last day, and they had like a minus 35 goal differential. They had no right to be in the playoffs. Everybody else kind of backed their way out of it. And they retooled a little bit in the summer, and then they were the best team in the East, and it didn't work out for them in the playoffs. You know, obviously matchups and whatever else, but that's the illustration of what you can do. Look, there's other teams that have been in the mushy middle forever. You look at a Detroit, you look at an Ottawa, Buffalo, all of those teams. So there's two ways you can go. I think, you know, that Barry's shown an aggressiveness. I think that's a huge part of it. When you look at some of those other teams, they haven't been aggressive. They've been really patient, and they've been waiting for their youth to pay off and their youth to pay off. And then by the time it does, it costs a lot of money, and you have to start retooling your team right away. So, you know, I think Barry has the ability and the willingness to make the moves that he needs to make. He's going to have a little bit more money this year, which is certainly going to help. And you know, I think coming out of the draft next week in LA, that there's going to be a little bit of chaos. And I think that there's a good chance that Nashville could be in the middle of it.
Sean, great stuff as always, brother. Appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning, and enjoy game 6. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, man. It was great joining you guys. Hopefully we cross paths soon.
Yes, sir. Sounds good. Sean Thanks, Rourke Sean. From NHL.com, our guest on Robbie and Rex Road. Cup final coming up tonight, game 6 back in Florida with the Panthers having a chance to close things out tonight and win back-to-back Stanley Cups. So we'll see if Florida gets it done tonight or if Edmonton can force a game 7 back at home, which would be on Friday later this week. We'll have the Rex Rant with Joe Rex Road coming up next, taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Tune in to 94.9 The Fan tonight as the Nashville Sounds take on Iowa. Pregame beginning at 6:20, first pitch at 6:35. Coverage also available on the Game Nashville app and at thegamenashville.com. Sounds baseball on 94.9 The Fan presented by Twin Peaks and Family Leisure. This is Robbie and Rex Row, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment, let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
See? He was thinking about that next Mayo commercial. Mayo tailgate be amazing.
Is that Lou Holtz?
The University of Notre Dame would never take that Will Levis.
What? Well, I don't get they bring me in cold.
The NBA used to be great, and now the NBA, hate to say it, kind of stinks.
Hey, Jared, shut up. Thanks.
This is Amy's poodle groomer.
I'm sorry, did I stutter?
You might want to sing it note for note. Don't worry.
It is that time of the day. Time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexro. Joe, with that beautiful introduction in the background, I turn things over to you.
Thank you. I just wanted to let that music really sink in a little bit. Such thank you, Bobby McFerrin, for that wonderful contribution to society. And yeah, that was a heck of a cut up there. So I'm going to talk today about the movie Sinners. There's a lot about Sunday that I guess could make me upset. One, I wake up Sunday with a gout attack and I'm like, you know, it's Father's Day. I'll be fine. I'll put on a shoe and I just won't tie it. And I mean, it's just like a little bit of walking into the theater and, you know, then you sit down and watch a movie. It's not that bad. That's probably a bad decision on my part. But I went to the movie Sinners. If anybody's seen the movie Sinners, it is Michael B. Jordan vehicle. It's caused quite a sensation. It actually came out like in April. That's sort of had like this resurgence here, and on Rotten Tomatoes, 97, and I mean that's like
it's very good.
That's big. That's heady stuff right there. Like the 97 on Rotten Tomatoes. That's kind of insane. I don't know. You know, I am a Rotten Tomatoes typically. Find that the Rotten Tomatoes ratings give you a pretty good idea about a movie. So I was like, okay, yeah, let's go check this out. Now, look, I knew it was R-rated, and so you expect there to be some adult stuff, and I knew that it was sort of like basically, if you haven't seen it, it's kind of half a movie about, like, Mississippi and the blues in the 1930s and half a movie about vampires. So
interesting.
Yeah, and overall, like, I enjoyed it. I think 97 seems a little lofty, but it's good. Like, I would recommend it if you're an adult. But here's my thing, and I know that I'm going to come off as a total prude here, and I certainly used to be someone as a teenager, as a kid, like, when movies came out, you know, when you're like, oh, there's a little nudity in that one, you know. Revenge of the Nerds or Porky's or whatever, you get all excited when you're a kid that maybe you'll catch a glimpse of nudity. I'm not foreign to the idea of, you know, R-rated movies, and I don't think it's like the end of the world if you're like a teenager. But I brought a 17 and 14 year old to this movie, and I just have to say, like, there were two scenes in this movie, sex scenes, that were so freaking graphic, in my opinion. Like, just way over the top, totally unnecessary, did not add anything to the movie. And that's my thing, okay? There are going to be adult situations in movies. I mean, it depends on the content. If it's a love story, whatever. I understand that you're going to have quote-unquote sex scenes. But this is part of why Katie and I totally disagree on Game of Thrones. Like, I didn't like some of the scenes. I'm like, dude, I don't want to watch that crap. Like, it's just too much. I don't want to watch like that level of graphic. Like, why? How does that add to the art? You know, and I'm not saying everything has to be that, you know, two people start to kiss and then you fade out until the next morning. I would probably prefer that. But like, do we have to be absolutely graphic? And how does that actually add to the art? I would ask people who make movies and TV shows, does this actually make your art better? And I think we've gotten into this. And again, I understand this is total old man yelling at cloud. I get it, but I don't care. I think it's kind of gross sometimes. And it's like, dude, like, there's pornography for a reason. Like, if people want pornography, they can go get pornography. But if you're going to watch a movie, and again, I feel like I'm taking my kids to, you know, again, it's like a vampire kind of action movie. And we have these two scenes that are like, why does it have to get this graphic and this specific? What does that do other than make people in the theater, like, especially me, very uncomfortable? I would ask that.
Extremely uncomfortable, yes.
It's just, yeah, I mean, you know, and I've been there too as a kid. Like, I'm trying to think, like, I don't remember what, but there was like a movie I was watching with my mom. Maybe it was like
that happened to me once too at the theater. I can't remember. Yeah. I can't remember which movie it was. It was Jodie Foster when she was like the Lost in the Woods. It was forever ago. But yeah, there was a little bit of nudity in that.
Just
and I was
like,
with my mom.
Oh,
like,
good.
Oh, yeah,
I'm here with my mom.
That's a little
awesome.
Weird. It wasn't even like sexual or anything, but yeah.
So imagine then take it to actual like a sexy, like it might have honestly been, and if anybody knows this, I know Big Joe, if he's listening, totally know, the movie, I think it was called My Tutor. It was like a 1980s, you know, and it was just like on cable and my mom's in the room like, oh God. But like, I'm sitting here and of course I'm like to my daughter, like turn away, you know, but it's like, again, if anybody's seen the movie, you probably know the two scenes I'm talking about. And it's like, it's not necessary. You could convey what happened in the scenes without, again, going into like about 30 seconds of, oh my God, why? I would ask artists moving forward to use those scenes with a little bit of discretion and a little bit of asking yourself, like, does this actually make it better? Because I would say in both of these cases, no, it did not make them better. And basically, most people would be uncomfortable watching both of those scenes.
Well said.
Measuring cheek size.
And as always, I would just urge people, if you're going to watch a movie, you know, do the TED test, right? Like, there are people that apparently show up to go watch TED, who's an R-rated movie, who thought it was a movie for kids about teddy bears. And turns out that was not the case. So just make sure you know. Heading in there. Good stuff.
Yes. And if you're at a baseball game and your kid's thirsty, don't buy your kid Mike's Hard Lemonade.
No, don't do that either.
It's not just lemonade. Keith says, listening to Rex discuss this is making me uncomfortable. Well, I'm uncomfortable too, Keith, okay?
Somebody wanted to know if you walked out.
I did not walk out, but I was like, oh, God. I like I said, I told my daughter, like, turn away. You know? And then again, my son's on the other side. I mean, he's like, what? I mean, he was like, what the hell? It's
just crazy stuff.
Yeah.
Crazy
but
stuff.
Other than that, good movie. Check it out.
Other than that, it was fine. 615-737-1025, our phone number. 615-737-1025. Stephen Holder from ESPN will be with us coming up next. We'll get his thoughts on the Colts and all things AFC South. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game.